In for Chad Hartman, I'm Dave Schrader. I don't know, I've seen something take place over the last probably 10 years of my life that has slowly begun to drive me absolutely crazy. The concept of time, of course, the older you get means more to you, but the fact that nobody seems to really respect each other's time anymore. The fact that 10 minutes late is not on time, but that is what the basic consideration is for most of the world, it appears, at this point. You know, I grew up with the old adage, if you're not early, you're late. And that was what my father instilled in me. Because you have to realize that when you're going to do something, you're promising to be somewhere, you're not just influencing your time, but you're influencing the time of the people that you're meeting with, the location that you're going to, the table that you have a reservation for. You're setting a whole wheel in motion that can disrupt and upset the pattern for many different people. But there seems to be this new I don't care attitude. I'm not going to blame it on any one generation because it, like a virus, it seems to have spread to everybody. There is no common courtesy when it comes to really experiencing and sharing time with one another anymore. I've noticed it more and more, and I know I'm starting to sound like that old guy shaking his fist on his front porch telling kids to stay off his lawn.
You're Grandpa Simpson right now.
But I just, Chris, it drives me absolutely insane. And they did a recent survey that found that depending on the generation you're born into, your definition of being on time could be drastically different.
Being on time means there is a time, and that is set, that is a static number,
right,
that you should adhere to.
Yeah.
If you do not adhere to that static number, you are not on time.
That's right. That's
right. To me, it's not a tough concept. When I was living in Houston, Houston is massive. Like, there was what they call Houston time because it's so damn big. Like, it would swallow Minneapolis, St. Paul whole. That is how big Houston is. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to be there in 45 minutes. Well, we know it's about an hour. Okay, it's because of Houston. But everywhere else, if it's like, hey, you're supposed to be here at 10:30. 10:30 doesn't mean 10:31, doesn't mean 10:35, doesn't mean 10:40, doesn't mean 11. 10:30 means 10:30. To me, and I mean, I'm not an old guy, but it's like, it's a matter of respect, too. I think it comes down to respect. You say something, just adhere by it. It's not that tough.
Yeah. And, you know, even I had a life of sales. So for the majority of my life, I've been involved in sales in one shape or another. And, you know, the workday started at 9 a.m. I would usually show up at about 8:30 because I knew what that meant was I wanted to get a cup of coffee. I might have to go to the bathroom. I want to set up and get my stuff ready so that 9 o'clock, I'm ready to start making my calls and doing what I need to do to
get my do your job at your assigned time.
Right. Not showing up at 8:59, sitting down, going over and getting a cup of coffee, hitting the restroom, talking with my buddies, then setting up and really not getting going until 10 o'clock or so.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very, very weird. And I understand everybody's got a different way of looking at things, but I've watched friends of mine struggle and stress. They own businesses and they're like, Dave, I can't get these people to show up on time. And I'm like, oh, is it this new generation? No, Dave, I've got elderly working for me, middle-aged people working for me, kids working for me. Like, their shift starts at 10 a.m. They walk in the door at 10 a.m. Then they have to go back in the back, put on their smocks, their aprons, their ties, whatever it is.
It takes time to get prepared and ready for your shift.
And show up, and then they've got this lag because maybe in some of the, you know, companies that are restaurants or cafes, the one group is leaving at that time. And you can't have this 15 to 20 minute window where there's nobody there to take care of the clients. And it's not fair to make the people that are supposed to have left at 10 a.m.
Yes.
stay till 10:20
because
you can't
yeah, you can't just like, okay, my shift is over at 11. If you have to wait till somebody else is there to pick up the slack, you can't just leave. Like, you have to rely on somebody else, and it drives me nuts. It absolutely drives me nuts. I'm glad that you're
now for parties and such. You know what? I'm not a, you know, if the party starts at 8 o'clock and you know it's going to go party 8 o'clock till whenever, it doesn't mean you have to be there at 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah, but that's for fun though. It's like showing up late to a baseball game or something. It's like, okay, if you show up second inning, third, whatever. But like when you have a responsibility to somebody. I feel like that's different when you have responsibility. Somebody's counting on you more or less than recreation.
Right. I've had that happen to me where I set up reservations to go meet for dinner with friends. Mm-hmm. And the reservations are at 8 o'clock. I say, okay, we're going to be there. Reservations are at 8. I'll get there about 7:45, 7:50 to make sure reservations are still set. There's no shift. Okay, great, great, great. Yeah. Sometimes I'm sitting at that table until 8:30 before people start rolling in. And, you know, the wait staff keeps coming over. Is anybody else joining you?
Is
sir?
It one of those where you can't order until your entire party's
there? Well, I could, but okay. To me, that's kind of a D-bag move, right? I mean, you wait for people that you're supposed to be having the meal with. You don't start eating because they're late.
Or they won't seat you until your entire party's there.
Sometimes, right? A lot of those places now say, we will not seat you. If your deal is at 8 o'clock,
yep.
You show up at 8 o'clock and we'll seat everybody. If you don't have everybody... And there's been times I've been to restaurants where it's like I have a reservation for 8. 6 of us are there at mm-hmm. 8. And they're like, well, I can give you a table for 6. Or we can wait and I'll try to squeeze you in later. And there's been a lot of times I'm like, we'll take the table for 6. Yeah. And when my other friends show up at 8:30, you're I'm like, nah, this is all they had.
Yeah. You know? Sorry about your damn luck there, pal.
Yeah. You know, you got to just show common courtesy. That's it. But I, you know, in this article, they're going over the fact that these different age groups have all this disrespect. But, you know, when you read it and boil it down, really, it's just about everybody. And again, 5 to 10 minutes doesn't seem like a lot to complain about when it comes to being late. But again, what is the level and what is the reason, you know, what are you late for? If it's work, if it's a doctor's appointment. And I do think medical has got to start working on a better schedule.
Oh, my gosh.
When you set an 8:30 a.m. appointment and they don't see you till 9:15, but you're supposed to be there 15 minutes before your appointment. So I'm there at 8:15. 8:30 is my appointment. 9:15 is when I finally get seen. That drives me crazy. Yet I will be charged if I don't show up for that appointment. I mean, that's one of the ways it just really gets under my skin. And we've got some people weighing in from the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Again, that number is 651-461-9226. One of the listeners says, I've always felt that I would rather wait for you than have you wait for me. I do value other people's time. That is perfect. Right. That's exactly it. I would rather wait for you than have you wait for me.
And I will tell you the worst I've ever had in terms of waiting for a doctor. I had a major shoulder surgery back in 2006. I had a follow up. I was supposed to have it at 8:30 in the morning. The doctor and I don't know why I was such a nice guy. I did not get seen till 1:30. I had to miss a whole day of work because the doctor came in at 1:30. 5 hours later and did some, okay. And I did that. And then I was gone. And I'm like, well, great. I just wasted an entire day of work for you to tell me it's fine. And I was just, I don't know why. As I've gotten older, I've gotten less accommodating to egregious acts of waiting or just disrespect.
I had, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll tell you a really frustrating story regarding my daughter who I almost lost her a handful of years ago due to her type 1 diabetes. And the response of the hospital was really kind of off-putting. We'll do that. We'll continue taking a look at your remarks here on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. At the bottom of the hour, Michael Bryant, the attorney, is going to join us as we talk a little bit about what's going on with the Alex Jones case. And I have some questions. I don't understand a few things and why we, the people, are not getting some justice in this as well as the families. We'll talk about that and more when we return. I'm Dave Schrader in for Chad Hartman right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back. We're talking about time. Time is not always on your side, and people's discourteous way of handling time. We were talking also about, obviously, the way medical staff handles our time. And, you know, a few years back, my daughter had developed the flu. And because of that and throwing up and not feeling well, she went into a spiral very fast. And for a type 1 diabetic, that can be extremely dangerous. I was still relatively new to understanding what all of this meant as a type 1 diabetic. It was the first cold, first sickness she had had as a type 1. And when I went in to check on her that night, she was completely out of it, unable to even identify who I was. I knew there was a problem. I lifted her in my arms. I could physically see her heart beating in her neck, in the muscle in her neck. I scooped her up in my arms, threw her in the car, ran to the hospital, called the hospital on the way, letting them know I'm coming. Here's what's going on. This is what's up. They're like, just pull over. We'll send an ambulance. I'm like, no, I don't think you realize how dangerous this is. And they're like, well, we're going to send somebody out. They'll be out to you in 15 to 20 minutes. I'm like, no, my daughter's in the car with me. We're 10 minutes from you now. If I pull over and wait another 15 to 20 minutes for you to get here, then it takes another 10 to 15 minutes. I feel like we're wasting time. And they were fighting me on this fact and you know, practically telling me I was a bad father for not doing what they requested. And I told them, listen, I'm going to be there. And I kept counting it down. I'm now going to be there in 5 minutes. So have somebody ready. I don't expect to sit in a waiting room with my daughter. We're in a bad place. And I swung the car in, come flying in, literally left the car idling in the front lot there, threw open the door, grabbed my daughter, ran inside, left the car open, you know, car running, ran in. They were waiting for me. So that was a plus. And they took care of her, got taken care of immediately. But I thought, my God, Let's take a look at how bad the timing is on this. When I'm telling you I'm rushing my daughter in and I think we're in a bad place, and we were. As a matter of fact, the doctor said, it's a good thing you got her here when you did, because had you waited another hour, we probably would be having a very drastic, sad conversation right now.
How do you convey that sense of urgency when sometimes they might not think it's a matter of life and death? Like, how do you, as a parent, when you're like, I'm going to get here, she needs immediate attention. Yeah. How do you communicate that?
That's exactly what I said. And I was very specific. I wasn't rude about it, but I was like, you will be ready for her. And when I get there, we're taking her back in. You're going to get somebody to get on her immediately, because she is almost unresponsive. When she is responsive, she has no idea who she is, where she is, or who I am. And that was a terrifying bit. We've got a caller on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. It's Nick on line one. Nick, welcome. What did you want to share with us?
Hello, Dave. Yes, I completely agree with you. First of all, I really liked your show last week on monsters.
Oh, thank you very much.
Welcome. And I understand you'll be on next Sunday, or this coming Sunday, too.
That's right. Every Sunday at 7 to 9, it'll be the Paranormal 360 right here on WCCO. Thanks for bringing that up, Nick. I appreciate it.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Yeah. So, no, I like the...
If you could turn your radio down in the back, Nick.
Staff will help me with stuff. And they help me with different things, and they say, you know, oh, we're just doing what we can, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes I understand it. Sometimes I don't. In other words, sometimes they say to me, oh, but my children are, you know, are in school. And it's like, okay, I understand that. But it seems to be this excuse after excuse after excuse. And I just have to calm down and realize, you know, I love people. But I also want people to be accommodating when they can be, and it's becoming almost this narcissistic.
No, you're 100% right, Nick, in the fact that when it comes to these things, and especially when you've got people that are coming out to help you, they may have excuses, but that doesn't fit the paradigm of what you're dealing with. You are expecting somebody at specific times, and that's important as well. And caretakers need to be responsible and take care of that. Marty is calling in on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line, line two. Marty, welcome to the show. What did you want to share with us?
Interesting. I want to make 2 points on your two topics, or, you know, two sure. subtopics you're doing. First is get off my lawn. A different perspective on right. my background. I worked in jobs ruled by federal hours of service, railroad engineer, mm-hmm. semi-truck driver.
Right.
If you start at 8 o'clock, you start at 8 o'clock. You show up, walk in the door. It's illegal to be doing anything before that. These employers that want you there all ready to go, so you log in at 8 o'clock and go, no, 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 no. You don't pay people enough to do that in most cases. The job starts at 8. If the employer needs to overlap 15 minutes or 30 minutes to do a shift change like factory work, that's why they work. The A shift is 8 to 4. The B shift is 3:30 to 11:30 and so on and so forth to cover that. So I just wanted to say there are exceptions.
Agreed.
I see this, you know, hear the disrespect. That's a huge problem we have in society right now, because everybody, can't say everybody, many people think they're deserved respect when they're not necessarily. So that's a trigger for me. But the other topic for medical, my wife works at Mayo, and the manager's schedule, right, that early time, like you said, to get you there. But that speaks to the greater problem. Like, our Albert Lea Hospital was shut down a couple years ago by Mayo, and it's just a clinic now, because they run healthcare at capacity like a business, instead of what it's supposed to be of having emergency rooms available.
Right.
And let's hope we only need them once a week or once a month, and let some staff have time off. But instead, our entire medical system has gone to, they want the doctors and the ER nurses and everybody run, because the people can wait. And that just, it drives us crazy, because that adds so much stress to the healthcare workers that, don't get me started.
Right. And I get you. And that is a big problem with this, is that we are turning away from service-oriented concept when it comes to medical, because the business side of things takes over. And that needs to be examined. I understand there's also a shortage in a lot of these places of medical staff that are on hand. They can only handle so many people for so long. But, you know, when you set appointments, I would think it would only behoove the doctor that he knows he's got one at 8:30, one at 9. Here's the deal. If you set an appointment at 8:30 and show up at 8:45, you sit there, and if they can fit you in, they fit you in. You've forfeited your time at that point. And, well, but it was bad weather, then you should have left earlier. There are points that you have to take responsibility for your own actions, but I completely understand what you're saying. Thank you very much for calling in and listening today. We appreciate it. A couple more responses on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. He says, one guy says, I tell my wife, maybe I'm assuming it's a guy, I tell my wife, who is constantly late, that being late tells the people you're supposed to meet that your time is more important than theirs. And that is the perfect encapsulation of it. It is showing complete and utter disrespect to other people's time and what they should be doing. I make mistakes. I've been late. That happens, right? We get caught up. I know a week or so ago I was coming in to fill in here, and it's like, I don't know, half an hour before showtime, and I'm getting a call. Hey, where are you? Inside, I'm laughing. I'm like, I'm not even on for another half an hour. Mm-hmm. I'm parking across the street right now, but the roads were shut off downtown Minneapolis. I was having a hard time getting into the parking area just to even get here. That took me 20 minutes around. So there are times things are going to shift, and you can't always be prepared. But, you know, being in radio for so long, if I knew my show started at 9 and I saw that there was snow coming in, I might have left at 7 o'clock.
You'd leave a little earlier, yeah.
Even though I'm only 20 minutes away from the station, I would leave at 7, because Minnesota, you don't know how long that drive's got. I could make it in 5 minutes. I could make it in 2.5 hours.
Yep.
I was trying to be respectful and responsible at all times. You do what you can when you can. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to be joined by attorney Michael Bryant, talking about the Alex Jones case. And there's a few aspects to this that are really troubling to me, aside from what he did and the pain and problems he put families through in Sandy Hook. I think that there's an even bigger issue on the table that I'm wondering why we're not addressing. We'll talk about that when we return right here on the Chad Hartman Show. I'm Dave Schrader. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to what is the land of confusion. I'm Dave Schrader in for Chad Hartman here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And a big story for today, Alex Jones, the infamous conspiracy theorist, is facing a major financial blow. A court has ordered him to liquidate his assets, including his media company, InfoWars, to pay $1.5 billion to the families of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting victims. This comes years after these legal battles began over Jones' false claims that the 2012 tragedy was nothing more than a hoax. Despite initial bankruptcy filings, the court is pushing for immediate asset liquidation to finally compensate the families. And on the line with us right now, attorney Mike Bryant. And Mike, this Alex Jones story, just, it seems weirder and weirder to me as I look at this. First of all, I can't believe it's taken this long for the courts to have weighed in and have tried this. And, you know, once they find him guilty, $1.5 billion. Why is there even talk about how they're going to pay this? Why haven't they forced his hand into liquidation and coming up with this money to begin with? He had no problem throwing everybody involved in the Sandy Hook tragedy under the bus immediately and not worrying at all about how it would affect their families, their finances, or their futures.
Yeah. Well, good afternoon. I mean, it's taken so long because there's been so many legal steps in all this. I mean, you had, you know, the prolonged litigation after a whole bunch of work on trying to get it worked out beforehand. And then you had the litigation and then you had the trial, which lasted, you know, longer than a lot of trials. And then you had the process that you went through after the trial, and then you had a bankrupt, and the attempt was to try to get out of everything through the bankruptcy, and you know, thankfully the court saw through that, and so now we've got the most recent ruling based upon the attempt to hide assets or based upon try to keep assets out of the bankruptcy. So it's involved a lot of layers of litigation, and that's why it's taken so long. And you know, it looks like they're finally going to make him come up with money, you know, real money to actually pay some of this, which is, you know, one of the interesting parts of all this, that, you know, his initial statements are filled with so much vitriol and so much righteousness. And then when it comes down to actually, you know, paying, you know, it's been every attempt whatsoever to get out of it.
Here's the other question I have about this. You know, he's online, he's on his site crying to his followers about how much money he needs from them and to help turn this thing around and make donations, and he's going to lose everything. I think we should put the guy up and give him 3 square meals a day in prison. Because I don't understand, if Dave Schrader started making claims against Minneapolis police that were false and against EMTs and against our government, I'm pretty sure I would be behind bars for impeding justice, impeding criminal investigations, for all of the things that he's done. Why has there been no criminal charges put on this guy, seeing that everything he said and stated, that this was a false flag program, that there was nobody that was actually killed or injured, these were all crisis actors, including the law enforcement that was involved in this. That is casting aspersions on law enforcement, casting aspersions on our government, casting aspersions. And I understand there is some, you know, there's some reasons for people to question things that our government does from time to time. But it seems when it's this blatant and complete disregard for respect, other, you know, very prominent media people have lost their entire careers and have been financially destroyed over these things. Some have even done jail time. Why is Alex Jones still free, and why hasn't the government pursued any kind of action at all on him?
Well, I mean, there's that's kind of an intertwined question, because, you know, the civil parts of it, libel or slander or things that he says, those are separate from, you know, criminal actions that actually they can bring charges where that would stick and they'd actually be able to do something with. I mean, some of what he says as far as criminally goes would probably be defended with First Amendment arguments, his right to say things even if they're crazy, and then, you know, and be left for the civil courts to make a determination as far as whether they're true or not. So I could see prosecutors deciding we're not going to, you know, go after this criminally because it'd be hard to get this charge to stick. And beyond that, you know, what's the crime that's committed there? I mean, he's definitely done things to injure the government with his statements. But the reality is I think there's lots of people that do that. And prosecutors, for the most part, don't seem to be interested in trying to do some sort of criminal charge like that.
Well, our former president has had to go to court because of things that he said and riots that he's incited. With Alex Jones's platform, he has caused people and incited in people rage and controversy, conspiracy. People have shown up on the doorsteps of these poor mourning families,
sure,
even heroes that were on the site, like the one bus driver that took a bunch of the kids and took care of them and protected them. People were showing up on his property, threatening him. So that means there's manpower, there's government money that's being mm-hmm. spent on protecting people that Alex Jones has incited into these frenzies because of his false narratives and claims. And yes, we have freedom of speech. But when that freedom of speech starts to impede on my freedoms and it starts causing challenges mm-hmm. for me, I would think that that right there is enough of a criminal element, because it's forcing law enforcement and government agencies to have to spend more time and money cleaning up the mess that Alex Jones is continuing to perpetuate.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I mean, the Trump charges primarily come out of election law and interfering with elections. And, you know, the question on whether or not there's actual treason involved, you know, which depends on what side of the fence you're on that. But, you know, that the charges go towards actually overthrowing the government or election laws. And then the charges in New York were based upon money issues that were, you know, also based upon election law issues. So the Trump stuff is different than just a direct, you know, say, yeah, he did this with Trump. Why can't we do this with Jones? For the most part, a lot of those things are either going to be handled for Jones, going to be handled civilly or not at all. I mean, there are charges that exist for, you know, wasting time or making false calls. The link, though, would have to be more probably for a prosecutor to take the case. It'd have to be more direct. You know, a lot of the actions taken by other people, they can get charged for what they did, but then you'd have to create some kind of, I don't know, conspiracy action or aiding and abetting action to go after Jones under the same criminal charges. So I think, again, it would probably be a very hard stretch for a prosecutor to get to Jones on that. And, you know, he is using this as a way to raise more money. You know, he claims he's raising the money to help pay it off, but I don't know. I think it's a way to raise money. And the civil action with the verdict and with the judgment against him, and now what the bankruptcy has done with it, probably has hit him more harder than anything could have hit him. Because that seems to be what a lot of this is all about, is ways to make more money and make a lot of money. And so, you know, they're hitting him in a lot of people's eyes as hard as you possibly can in the way that he understands what he can be hit for.
But the culpability, right? They are now mm-hmm. going after parents of children that commit crimes. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, as you know, I know it's kind of a different stretch, but when you've got somebody inciting anger, hatred, frustration, yep. fear, and these people are going and breaking in or sending letters or showing up on the property, isn't that a level of culpability that's criminal as well? Because this would not have happened had he not said these things and incited this kind of reaction from his followers.
Yeah, and the parent situations are, you know, these where you've had these school shootings or they've gone and shot people and then they've gone after the parents because of their access to guns or the way that they handled it from their end and what they knew and those type of things. Those are far more direct contacts between the actor who does the crime and the person that's charged in the conspiracy. This would be a very different conspiracy because, you know, if he's meeting with the people and saying, here, you go do these things, then I can see that. But if it's him putting out the statement and someone taking it in this direction, even though it's very clear what he's telling them to do, it probably still would be hard for a prosecutor to have all the elements of the connection between the actor and the person that pushed for it. I mean, you know, Jones could say he says these things, but I don't expect anybody to act on them. You know, I think probably they would again say the best place for this is the civil courts for his actions and what people did with it. And here's proof of what they did with it versus the civil charge. That'd be that direct. The other thing is, you know, you always, even with the most heinous actions of people, you always run into a little bit of situation of, well, you know, the government making certain criminal actions criminal, you know, can be turned around very easily when a new government comes in and say, well, you know, when they do this, they cause X to happen or Y to happen. And that's kind of, you know, more contrary to what our government's set up to do anyway. And the laws, as unfortunate as it seems to be in some cases, you know, they're there for protecting everybody. And, you know, unfortunately, I think he has a right to say certain things, and people take him in bizarre actions and do horrible things with the people that, you know, are easily can be looked at as wrong. But whether or not you could charge somebody else for that, I don't know. I think that'd be hard for the government to do. And I'm not sure I want the government to have all of that power to do that.
Understandable. Good insights on this. Michael Bryant, thank you so much for joining us and spending a little time here today.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Brad, Sean Bryant, Michael Bryant, our guest. I want to know what your thoughts are on this. You can hit me up through the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line, 651-461-9226. That's 651-461-9226. And I want to thank again Michael Bryant on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to the program. In for Chad Hartman, I'm Dave Schrader. It is 12:52, time for your Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to receive and keep your basement dry and get 50% off installation labor on Leaf Guard gutters. Taking a quick peek over at our stylesfinancial.com talk and text line, talking about Alex Jones. One listener says, there is a special place in hell for Alex Jones. Another says, what exactly did Alex Jones do? Well, for those of you that might have been living in a cave and not heard what Alex Jones did, after the tragedy that befell Sandy Hook in 2012, when I want to say, was it 20 children and 6 adults were brutally gunned down in the Sandy Hook school, they made false flag claims, claiming that it was a crisis actors that were used and utilizing different aspects of news video footage. Now, what he did then was incite his listeners and people around the world to believe that what took place there didn't actually occur. So not only did 40 parents lose 20 children in this tragedy, they were being told that these children never existed. They were being denied. Then people started receiving death threats because this was just a trap to take us away from our guns. And I can't even understand this. How many times they've said, oh, this is a trap in order to take away our guns. Yet our guns have never been taken away. Our presidents have been shot and our guns have not been taken away. There have been some subtle changes to laws and making things a little bit harder and making it more transparent when trying to get a gun. And they're doing what they can to try to adjust and make, you know, the masses as happy as they can. But we have yet to lose that gun privilege or right. So to keep hiding behind that as a way to just create content is very disheartening. And he created so much trauma. There was one of the bus drivers who lived not far from there, children that ran out of the school, ran to him. He collected them, protected them, kept them safe during all of this. And they interviewed him. People were showing up on his property. His life began being threatened. This guy was a hero. He was doing his best to try to protect and save these children. And it was just such an overall ridiculous thing. The sad part was, I know people that were boots on the ground stepping over the bodies of children and teachers and adults alike that are never going to be the same. That what they witnessed, what they saw will be emblazoned in their lives, PTSD for the remainder of their life. And they have some jackass like Alex Jones going on air, making these claims and statements and showing no remorse for any of what he's done. His remorse is that he got caught and that he has to pay $1.5 billion.
It was malicious. Yeah. It was completely malicious on his part. And what bothers me is that we used to look at people like Alex Jones and say, man, you are so full of garbage.
Yeah.
Like, you're such an arrogant.
Sadly, it's not everybody. There's a big swath of people. But
I know, but now it's become normalized. Like, what Alex Jones preaches,
right?
People have a tendency to believe it for whatever reason. And you're like, you can look at it and know that this is, I don't even know what the end goal was to hurt those involved with Sandy Hook, because it's some sort of, you want to take away our guns, but people are.
It was giving him something to create a content vibe. It was something that he jumped on red flags, those false flags. It was things that would get people's attention. And listen, you know, there is a place for people that are willing to question, because look at all of the people that were questioning the COVID vaccinations. And now here we are 2, 3, 4 years out from these vaccinations, finding out that they were a lot more dangerous than we were being told. I was required to take the COVID vaccination. I would have taken it anyway for fear of, you know, being at high risk. But finding out now that there were many things that were falsified or that we were smokescreened about, it's very disheartening. Another one of the listeners says, one of the saddest things about this is that we have such an uncivil society now, and people like Jones, who would have been shunned in the past, are getting rich by being so despicable. Thank God we have our laws for now. Yeah. All right. That's it for this hour. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss, including a potential strike on our planet from an asteroid. 72% chance colliding with Earth on July 12th, 2038. That's my Alex Jones attempt right there to get some listeners.
But, you're not gravelly enough. You got to be gravelly.
And I'm not crying enough. But we're going to talk about that and so much more. In for Chad Hartman, I'm Dave Schrader. This is News Talk 830 WCCO.